Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Susie Haynes reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, January 21st, 2023, the local and state news. Midland reports state's lowest jobless numbers, by Mella McEwen. Midland continued its rise to the top of the state's labor market as 2022 came to an end, cementing its recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. The Texas Workforce Commission said Friday unemployment in its Midland Metropolitan Statistical Area, MSA, which includes Midland and Martin counties, fell to 2.6% from 2.8% in November and well below the 4% reported in December of 2021. Midland is tied with Amarillo for the state's lowest unemployment after Austin Round Rock broke November's three-way tie by dipping to 2.7%. Odessa reported similar growth, falling to 3.8% from 4% in November, well below the 5.8% Odessa reported the previous December. We are definitely in full recovery mode, Willie Taylor, chief executive officer of the Commission's Workforce Solutions Permian Basin, which oversees 17 West Texas counties. Speaking with the Reporter Telegram by telephone, Taylor noted that at the height of the economic damage caused by the pandemic, the region had more than 72,000 drawing unemployment. That number has declined significantly, he said, and activity in the offices he oversees are seeing increased activity as residents seek jobs and employers seek workers. He noted that now hiring signs continue to be seen across the Permian Basin, and man camps are again beginning to fill up as the area's oil patch ramps up activity. Workforce will remain a concern, said Taylor, referring to the comments earlier this week from Pioneer Natural Resources President and Chief Operating Officer Richard Dealey that total workforce demand in the Permian Basin will increase 95% in 2050 from 2020's levels. Demand for educators and healthcare providers alone is expected to rise 15% by 2030 from 2020 levels. It will be a process that will take time, he said. Helping in the effort is improved infrastructure like housing and roads, he added. One of the things we've talked about in the workforce board meetings is identifying training areas, Taylor said. There have been about 35 identified so far, from healthcare providers to educators, truck drivers to auto and diesel mechanics. Some of the projected growth is unbelievable when you look at the skills, he said, and that is driving up wages, he added. The mining, logging, and construction sector alone had more than $834 million in wages in the second quarter, the most recent available. As long as we're paying those wages, we'll attract people, said Taylor. He said workers are coming to the area from Louisiana, Oklahoma, Houston, and El Paso, among others, to find work. The fact that the local colleges, from Midland and Odessa College to Howard College to the University of Permian Basin, have full training programs is a good sign, he said. Our workforce has a place for all ages, he said. We also continue to have new businesses open up, but it will be difficult for a while. Midland's civilian labor force grew by about 700 from November to December to 105,497. Of the labor force, 102,761 are employed, almost 1,000 more than in November, and 2,736 are unemployed, down more than 2,000 from November. For the 12 months from December 2021 to December 2022, Midland's labor force grew by 1,848, and the number of employed is up by 3,242. And the number of unemployed has fallen by 1,394. Midland reported 110,600 total non-farm jobs in December, up 800 from November. The mining, logging, and construction sector again led, adding 600 jobs, while the trade, transportation, and utility sector added 200 new jobs. All other sectors were unchanged. Midland added 5,100 jobs from December 2021 to December 2022 for a growth rate of 4.8%. The mining, logging, and construction sector again dominated, adding 3,000 new jobs. The leisure and hospitality sector added 700 jobs. The manufacturing sector, trade, transportation, and utilities sector, and education and health services sector each added 300 jobs, while other services sector added 200 jobs. Financial activities, the professional and business services sector, and the government sector added 100 jobs each. Statewide, the unemployment rate was a seasonally adjusted 3.9%. For the first time, it has fallen below 4% since February of 2020. The state added 29,500 jobs from November to December for a total of 13,705,500 non-farm jobs, the 14th consecutive monthly record employment high in Texas. While Midland and Amarillo reported the lowest unemployment in the state, the highest was in McAllen, Edinburgh, Mission at 6.8%. What else is in the Hogan Park Project Agreement? By Stuart Doreen. The Hogan Park Project will go before the Midland City Council at Tuesday's meeting inside City Hall. The Hogan Park Development Agreement is online for all Midlanders to examine. Go to the council packet at https://www.midlandtexas.gov/967/prime-gov-meetings. The agreement regarding the 120 acres, which does not include the golf course, includes that the city will spend $10 million minus $5,884,848.42 million that the city has already spent on improvements to the Bill Williams softball complex on the project and provide an annual management fee equal to the lesser of $2 million or actual operating costs. The city also shows the annual management fee can increase annually based on an index escalator not to exceed 1.035. Other basics of the deal are that the initial term of the proposed agreement is 25 years with two optional 20-year renewals. The Conservancy can terminate the agreement by July 31st if it cannot obtain commitments from donors and has until July 1st, 2024 to complete a capital campaign to raise the capital contribution of a minimum of $30 million. The Conservancy will be required to construct the features listed as main features, including baseball fields, dog parks, the Tall City Playground and Splash Pad, and the covered basketball courts. Construction of the project should commence no later than July 1, 2025. An examination of the agreement shows other details. First, the Bill Williams softball complex is not included in the project's scope. That means that the City of Midland will finish improvement to the complex. Once completed, the Conservancy will operate and maintain the softball complex, one of the marquee facilities for sports tourism in Midland. Second, there are amenities that will not be part of the project, at least initially. Conservancy officials had hoped for a total project cost closer to $55 million. A reduction in funding means less amenities. The agreement states the trail system around the park, the multipurpose fields, and sand volleyball courts are also not included in the scope, but can be added in the future at the expense of the Conservancy. Third, there will be 7 board of directors ultimately overseeing the park, 3 of which will be appointed by the city. That ratio is the same to the makeup of the board that oversees Centennial Park in downtown. Conservancy officials told the Reporter-Telegram the Conservancy will come up with a user fee schedule, but it will be approved by the Midland City Council. Fourth, the Conservancy will have the right to use the existing water wells on the property, not to exceed 110% of current usage and drill new water wells with the city's approval. Also, the city will not charge the conservancy above the lowest water rate charged to the public for water usage, notwithstanding the volume of water used to the project. The Hogan Park project has garnered more attention over the past few months, Midland Mayor Lori Blong stated in an email. I am glad it is now time for council to make a decision about how we will proceed. As we head into Tuesday's meeting, we invite you to email your thoughts and opinions to the council. My email is lblong@midlandtexas.gov. I would love to hear from you. Terrazita adds new restaurant to Central Midland by Ben Schaefer. A new Central Midland restaurant was 7 months in the making. Terrazita opened Thursday at 1501 North Big String Street in Central Midland. According to co-owner Robert Gamino, passing inspections and finding contractors were the hardest parts of opening a restaurant. Inspectors, you know, the city of Midland, that's your main deal, Gamino said. Everything has to be done right and the way they want it to be able to open. Contractors as well, finding the right ones to do the job the right way. Gamino added, finding the right location and time to add a restaurant to Midland is important, as well as finding materials for construction. Despite closures of local favorites in Midland over the last few months due to understaffing, Gamino said staffing was the easy part of opening the restaurant. We brought people here with experience, he said. The cooks and the managers and everything. They pretty much knew all the people they were going to bring in. Gamino said that word-of-mouth advertising of a new restaurant opening allowed more current employees to hear about opportunities at Terrazita. Gamino said there are about 30 employees. They seem to range from young adults to middle-aged. For Terrazita, construction and renovation of the existing abandoned building and turning it into a beautiful modern restaurant was challenging. Gamino wants customers to fall in love with the unique menu, the experienced staff and service. Terrazita's Instagram page describes the restaurant as something different from what you were used to, and your new favorite place in Midland where seafood and steaks taste like they're supposed to. We want them to come back, and we want them to be here, he said. What's Up with Midland by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Horseshoe Arena, West Texas Wedding Expo, January 29th. La Hacienda Event Center, Laberinto, January 27th. Museum of the Southwest, Seymour Fogle, Tuesday. Simon Warrench, Tuesday. Tall City Brewing Company, 3 beer releases, January. Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, Chester Gregory, tribute to Jackie Wilson and Friends, Tuesday. Aaron Lewis, January 27th. Fortune Femster, January 29th. Chocolate Decadence, Wedding Expo, Top Community Calendar by Stuart Doreen. Keep Midland Beautiful Fundraising. Keep Midland Beautiful wants nonprofits to know there is a way to earn extra money. The program is Trash for Cash, and it allows groups to clean up Midland and raise money. Call 432-688-7745 or email kmb@keepmidlandbeautiful.org for more information. Calendar, Chocolate Decadence, presented by the Aphasia Center of West Texas, 6:30 p.m., January 27th, Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. West Texas Wedding Expo, January 29th, Horseshoe Pavilion. Dogs Rescue R Us, a Golden Tail Casino Potty Night, 7 through 10 p.m., January 28th, Ranchland Hills Golf Club, online at drru.org. Silver Spur Trade Show, February 5th, Horseshoe Pavilion. Desert Paw Obedience Club Agility Show, February 11th through 12th, Horseshoe Livestock Building. Annual Prayer Breakfast, 7 to 8:15 a.m., Bush Convention Center. West Texas Kennel Club, February 16th through 18th, Horseshoe Pavilion. From Disability to Possibility, The Power of Inclusive Classrooms, presented by Bynum School, February 17th, Bynum School. Wild Wild West Casino Night, benefiting Oil Patch Kids. February 24th, Bush Convention Center. https://www.betterunite.com/oilpatchkids-wildwildwestcasino-night. Upcoming meetings. Midland City Council, 10 a.m. Tuesday, Council Chamber, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. DPS, 8 Arrested and Joint Prostitution Sting in Midland, by Mercedes Cordero. 8 people are facing felony charges after being arrested Thursday in Midland following a joint human trafficking operation, according to the Department of Public Safety. On Thursday, DPS's Criminal Investigations Division, CID, conducted an adult prostitution operation and online solicitation operation. All 8 men are charged with solicitation of prostitution, a state felony. Homeland Security Investigations and the Midland County Sheriff's Office assisted DPS in the investigation. The goal was to target individuals seeking to exploit and victimize trafficking victims, as well as to identify and apprehend individuals suspected to be involved in human trafficking by using various websites to solicit sexual acts, DPS said in a press release. Those arrested were Brandon Compton, 40 years old, of Midland, Justin Wright, 31, of Midland, Clay Briggs, 42, of Big Spring, Zachary McCurdy, 40, of Big Spring, Daniel Marufo, 38, of Odessa, Adrian Rodriguez, 41, of Odessa, Justin Baker, 32, of Haslett, and Victor Cantu, 33, of Rock Island. Special agents also identified and opened investigations into additional suspects. These investigations highlight the partnership between local, state, and federal law enforcement partners working together to combat human trafficking, DPS said in a press release. If you are a victim of human trafficking or have information about this type of criminal activity, please contact the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 888-373-7888. Midlanders Concerned About Development, by Stuart Doreen. Is there another Nueva Vista-like situation brewing in West Midland? Residents in the Legacy Housing Development and their Midland City Council representative believe that might be the case. There are worries about additional housing being planned by D.R. Horton in and south of the current Legacy Addition. The preliminary plat was expected to go before the Planning and Zoning Commission this week, but the commission did not meet because of a lack of a quorum. City of Midland officials said the next meeting is scheduled for February 6th. That gives the developer, residents, and city staff time to talk about the situation. A community meeting is scheduled for Thursday at Yarborough Elementary. I see similarities to Nueva Vista, District 4 Councilwoman Amy Stretcher Burke said. I'm encouraged to see people taking part of the process. Burks lives in the Grassland Estates area and helped bring awareness to the situation there as developers wanted to put housing on the neighboring acreage that currently includes the Nueva Vista Golf Course. This week, the Reporter-Telegram spoke to Ramon Sanchez, a resident of Legacy Estates, which is west of the Scarborough Sports Complex. He said residents are upset of the prospect of more housing, especially in an area that he called a commons area of the current development. He said that area was expected to be left empty, and some housing built around that area was sold to residents as premium lots because of the empty space. Sanchez also said flooding and traffic are an issue with increased development. Traffic, he said, is a worry because of the few exits on Deauville and Avalon Streets from the Legacy development. He said residents are worried that Yarborough Elementary is already bursting at the seams, and additional families will make that situation worse. MISD officials have previously said elementary zones are looked at regularly, and recently other schools in the southwest portion of the city, like Jones Elementary, were running below capacity. Burke said she would like to see D.R. Horton to reach out and be part of the conversations on this issue. they have quite a few objection letters, Burks said. Chinese banned from owning Texas land under proposed bill by Robert Downen. Governor Greg Abbott said this week he would sign a proposed bill banning citizens and foreign entities from four countries, including China, from buying Texas land. Filed in November by Brenham Republican Senator Lois Kuchholz, Senate Bill 147 would ban citizens, governments, and entities from China, Iran, North Korea, and Russia from purchasing land here, part of which she and other Republicans have said will help stem foreign influence in Texas. The bill would also prohibit the purchase or acquisition of property by a governmental entity of the four countries, by a company headquartered in the four countries, and by a company directly or indirectly controlled by a government of the four countries. Opponents say the bill and the GOP's broader emphasis on threats from the Chinese government is likely to further sow anti-Asian sentiment that has skyrocketed in recent years and will disenfranchise immigrants, business owners, and green card holders while doing little to address any national security concerns. If signed into law, this bill would make anti-Asian hate state policy, the Houston chapter of the Council on American-Islamic Relations said Friday. It would violate the fundamental rights of not only citizens of other countries, regardless of their relationship to their governments, but also green card holders and possibly dual citizens. Others echoed those concerns this week. The bill doesn't say military bases, said State Representative Gene Wu, whose Houston district encompasses a large Chinese-American population. There is no discernment about what type of land is being purchased or who is doing the purchasing. It targets individuals indiscriminately. Wu also feared that the Chinese government could retaliate over the ban and that it could complicate the ability of businesses of all sizes in the U.S. to work with Chinese counterparts or compete in an increasingly globalized marketplace. The proposal follows a 2021 bill that banned Texas businesses and government officials from making infrastructure deals with interests from the four countries. That legislation, which passed unanimously, was filed in response to a Zhejiang-based real estate tycoon's purchase of roughly 140,000 acres for a wind farm in Valverde, a small border town near Laughlin Air Force Base. Kuchholz said her bill was similarly prompted by concern over growing ownership of Texas land by foreign entities. The time to address adversarial countries acquiring land is before it becomes widespread, not after they already control substantial amounts of Texas, she said earlier this week. Late Friday afternoon, Kuchholz said in a statement that the bill will make crystal clear that the prohibitions do not apply to United States citizens and lawful permanent residents. She also added that the bill does not prohibit foreign business investment in Texas because companies may still do business by leasing land and buildings. Kuchholz's proposal comes amid a wave of bills and rhetoric targeting China. Communist China, America's greatest foe, is on a bender, Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller wrote in an op-ed last year that called for such a ban. They are buying up farmland across the United States and Texas. But, taken together, investors from the four countries account for a tiny sliver of foreign-owned farmland, both in Texas and nationally. Chinese investors own about 383,000 total acres of U.S. farmland, about 600 square miles, which is less than 1% of total foreign-held acreage, according to the United States Department of Agriculture's 2021 land report. Investors from Russia, Iran, and North Korea collectively own less than 3,000 acres, according to USDA. Canadian investors account for about 31% of foreign-owned farmland in the United States, by far the largest share, followed by investors from the Netherlands at 12% and those from Italy at 7%. In October, Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives called for an investigation into foreign land investment nationally. former President Donald Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who is considered a top GOP presidential contender should he run, have recently said they support such bans. Tax abatement for NextEra's wind farm to come before the county by Ben Schaefer. The tax abatement for NextEra's wind farm is on the Midland County Commissioners' Court agenda Monday. In November, county commissioners approved a reinvestment zone for the planned location of the wind farm, the first step toward granting a tax abatement. But the abatement discussion itself was postponed to a later date. NextEra is developing the facility, a 141-megawatt facility comprised of 47 3-megawatt turbines. They will be placed on surface acreage Pioneer owns on the Hutt Ranch in southeast Midland County. According to officials from County Judge Terry Johnson's office, Johnson will not be abstaining from this vote, as Johnson's company, TCO Field Service, deals with Pioneer, not NextEra, for which the tax abatement will officially be granted or voted against. During the November Commissioners' Court, two Midlanders voiced their concern with the project, citing a lack of long-term, full-time job creation and minimal benefits for locals. Daniel Pender, Surface Land and Business Development Director of Pioneer Natural Resources, told the court that this project is a critical first step in reducing emissions. Pioneer has agreed to purchase power from the facility, expected to be operational in 2024, for use in its oil and gas operations. Targa Resources will also participate, using power from the facility for its processing plants. Rig count falls amid oil drilling slump by Mellon McEwen. Drilling activity posted its weakest performance in 16 months as both the U.S. rig count and number of oil rigs fell during the week. Oilfield services company Baker Hughes said Friday the U.S. rig count it has issued weekly since the 1940s fell 4 rigs to 771, the lowest level since November. Still, the count is up 167 rigs, or 28%, over the 604 reported last January. The number of rigs drilling for crude oil sank by 10 rigs to 613, the biggest weekly cut since September 2021, and the lowest number since November. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas, on the other hand, jumped by 6, their biggest weekly rise since February, and 43 rigs higher than the 113 counted a year ago. Texas bucked the trend, adding 1 rig during the week for 380 at work statewide, 100 more than the 280 Baker Hughes counted last year. Texas was the only producing state to see an increase. New Mexico edged down 1 rig to 102, Alaska 1, and Louisiana 3 joined New Mexico as producing states to see a decline. The Permian Basin fell by 2 rigs to 354 rigs active in the region, 62 higher than the 292 active a year earlier. Lee County, New Mexico remains the most active in the Permian, with 66 rigs unchanged for the week. Martin County is second with 36 rigs unchanged for the week. Reeves County added 1 rig for 35, and Eddy County, New Mexico fell 1 rig to 34. Midland County saw its rig count decline for a second week, dropping 1 rig to 29. Loving County also saw 29 rigs for a third week. Howard County reported 22 rigs for a fifth consecutive week, followed by Upton County reporting 16 rigs for a third week. Ward County lost 2 rigs to 14. Glasscock County remained at 11 rigs a second week and reported 10 rigs for a fifth week. Dawson and King County saw no activity, losing the 1 rig at work in each county, while Crockett County saw renewed activity with 1 rig at work within county lines. Inverness Foundations, part of the energy-focused software-as-a-service firm Inverus, said its U.S. rig count reached 878 during the week ended January 18th, rising by 10 from the previous week. The count is up 1% from a month earlier and up 22% year over year. In the last week, the Gulf Coast jumped by 6 rigs to 121. Basins adding one rig each were the Permian at 337 and the Williston at 42. The DJ Basin was flat at 19 rigs, while the Anadarko and Appalachia Basins lost 2 each at 82 and 54. The most active drillers in the Gulf Coast were EOG Resources with 7 rigs, ConocoPhillips with 6, and Marathon Oil with 4. There are currently 80 operators running rigs in the region, compared to 61 a year ago. U.S. allies agree on Russian fuel price cap by Scott Landman. Officials from the U.S. and allied nations agreed to move toward instituting price caps on Russian refined fuel products while also planning to review the level of crude price cap in March. The agreement came in discussions among officials in the Price Cap Coalition, according to a U.S. Treasury statement Friday, following Deputy Treasury Secretary Wally Adeyemo's virtual meeting with other deputy ministers. The deputies agreed to an approach for refined products that will institute 2 distinct caps in addition to the crude cap. One cap for products that generally trade at a premium to crude, such as diesel or gas oil, and one for products that trade at a discount to crude, such as fuel oil, according to the statement. Chinese demand sends oil prices over $80 by Mella McEwen. Bullishness over increased oil demand coming from China fueled a rally that sent oil prices above $80 a barrel and the highest since mid-November. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange rose 3 of 4 trading days this holiday-shortened week, starting with a 32-cent rise Tuesday. The near-month contract for February delivery, which expired Friday, added 98 cents to close the week at $81.31 a barrel, up from $79.86 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $77.79 a barrel, according to Plains All American. Natural gas prices continued to sink amid warm weather forecast. Henry Hub prices on the NYMEX fell 3 of 4 trading days, opening with a 16.7-cent gain, which was wiped out by a 27.5-cent drop Wednesday. Prices fell another 10 cents Friday to end the week at $3.174 per MCF. Recession risks remain, both in the U.S. as consumer confidence falls to all-time lows and in Europe, which faces energy rationing. Richard Dealey, president and chief operating officer of Pioneer Natural Resources, said this week at the Midland Chamber of Commerce's annual State of Oil and Gas Luncheon. He pointed out that oil demand has historically remained resilient, even amid economic recessions. He cited statistics from the World Bank that over the past 70 years, the world economy has experienced 5 global recessions of varying durations, during which per capita gross domestic product contracted. Even including those recessions, oil demand has consistently grown, with demand contracting in only 10 of the last 60 years. In those 10 years, Dealey said demand was impacted by about 1.1 million barrels of oil per day, or about 2% on average. Even amid a severe recession, he told attendees, oil prices are expected to remain at $60 or above, buffered by wide refinery margins, low inventories, and continued supply-side underinvestment, which has reached historic lows. Dealey said Pioneer is forecasting oil prices will remain strong between $80 and $120 a barrel over the next 3 to 5 years, supported by robust demand growth and limited supply growth unlikely to keep up with demand. Edward Moya, senior market analyst, The Americas with Oanda, said in his daily e-newsletter that China is indeed setting the direction for oil markets. Crude prices had a good week as China reopening optimism spearheaded this bullish move higher. Will global oil demand continue to grow as recession risks rise? It seems many energy traders are betting on that, Moya wrote. The start of the Chinese New Year holiday will be closely watched to see if travel is as robust as many are thinking. Electric bills likely to rise under ERCOT revamp by Kyra Buckley. Changes are coming to the Texas electricity market, but after months of debate, it's still unclear how much the new plan will cost consumers. After the deadly winter storm in February 2021 that left millions in the state without power, some for days, the legislature tasked the Public Utilities Commission with redesigning parts of the state's electricity market. After nearly 2 years of debate, on Thursday, the PUC approved what is called a performance credit mechanism model that gives power generators a credit for being available when reserve power margins are lowest. Retail electricity providers such as Reliant and TXU, as well as cooperatives and municipal utilities, would pay for those credits. Those power retailers, however, are likely to pass the added costs on to consumers, and the plan passed by the PUC doesn't directly address if or how those costs can show up on residents' utility bills. Prosecutors seek justice in Baldwin set shooting case by Morgan Lee. Alec Baldwin faces two types of manslaughter charges in a reckoning on gun safety and the film industry, with two potential standards for proof and possible sanctions of up to 5 years in prison. Prosecutors have vowed to file those charges before February against the 64-year-old actor and weapons specialist Hannah Gutierrez Reed in the fatal shooting of a cinematographer on the set of the Western movie Rust in October 2021. Santa Fe District Attorney Mary Carmack Altweis says the case is about equal justice under the law and accountability in the death of Helena Hutchins, regardless of the fame or fortune of those involved. She says the Ukrainian-born cinematographer's death while rehearsing a scene was tragic and preventable. Baldwin and Gutierrez Reed maintain their innocence and have vowed to fight the charges, which were announced Thursday. One charge of involuntary manslaughter will require proof of negligence. It's punishable by up to 18 months in jail and a $5,000 fine under New Mexico law. The second manslaughter charge is for reckless disregard of safety without due caution and circumspection. It carries a higher threshold of wrongdoing and includes a firearm enhancement that could result in a mandatory 5 years in prison because the offense was committed with a gun. Baldwin has said he had no reason to believe there was a live bullet in the gun he discharged. That defense is complicated by his role as both lead actor and co-producer on Rust. State workplace safety regulators have fined Rust Movie Productions based on a string of safety failures, including testimony that production managers took limited or no action to address two misfires of blank ammunition on the set prior to the shooting. A year-long investigation by Santa Fe County Sheriff Aiden Mendoza did not establish how live ammunition wound up on the film set. Southwest Airlines are sending gratitude pay to workers for festive chaos by Kyle Arnold. Dallas-based Southwest Airlines is sending millions of dollars in gratitude pay to workers after the historic meltdown that led to 16,700 flight cancellations in late December. Pilots are among several operational work groups offered the bonus pay for their efforts during the unprecedented disruptions over the holidays, said Southwest Airlines spokeswoman Brandy King, although the company would not disclose exactly which work groups were given the bonuses or the total payout. The carrier's union of 10,000 pilots will take in approximately $45 million in additional pay on top of extra pay already given for holidays and reassignment pay. That would equal nearly $4,500 per pilot. The Southwest Airlines Pilot Association voted to accept the bonus pay Thursday. employees across the company should see the bonuses on their paychecks starting in late February. Southwest has already put a $725 million to $825 million estimate on the lost revenue and other costs tied to the late December breakdown, including refunds and reimbursements for customers, $300 in flight credits for passengers disrupted, and about $400 in credits to the company store for employees. The company said this new round of pay bonuses is already accounted for as part of that previous estimate. The company reported its fourth quarter and full year 2022 earnings on January 26. Southwest suffered a catastrophic operational stretch starting December 22nd when a winter storm blew across the U.S. and hit key airports in Chicago and Denver. With two major crew bases out, the company's crew rescheduling software struggled to keep up with the need to put pilots and flight attendants on new flights, and the company eventually lost track of thousands of workers. The bonus pay applies to those who worked shifts between December 20th and January 3rd. As pilots and flight attendants were desperately trying to get through to the company to get assigned to flights, the company canceled as many as 75% of its flights during the peak because there were no crew members assigned to work them. CEO Bob Jordan has repeatedly apologized to employees and promised to work to make sure that a similar meltdown never happens again. "I'm not excusing what happened," Jordan said last week. "I mean, we messed up for our customers. We messed up for our people." Southwest has hired third-party consulting firm Oliver Wyman to research the cause of the problem and possible solutions, and the carrier is also working with GE, which supplies the crew scheduling software, on an update to fix the issues behind the cancellations. "I'm sorry for the physical and emotional toll," Jordan said in a memo to employees earlier this month, with the offer of credits to the company's store. "I'm sorry for the loss of time and memories that can never be replaced. Most of all, I'm sorry about the damage to your confidence and trust." Texas GOP launches attack on Speaker, by Patrick Zvitek. The Republican Party of Texas launched a striking attack on one of its own this week, State House Speaker Dade Phelan, sparking a backlash from some Republicans in the chamber. The state party began airing a radio ad that takes Phelan to task for allowing Democrats to continue chairing House committees, a longtime tradition that a small faction of House Republicans sought to end last week as the chamber crafted its rules package. But Phelan and his allies outmaneuvered them, preventing the issue, a state GOP priority, from even reaching a floor vote. In the minute-long ad, the narrator says the speaker is teaming up with Democrats to kill our Republican priorities. The spot started running Wednesday in Phelan's Southeast Texas district, according to a tweet from Texas GOP chair Matt Rinaldi. "Call Dade Phelan today," the ad tells Phelan's constituents. "Tell him to be a Republican. Tell him to stop empowering Democrats. Tell him to listen to the 85% of voters who support banning Democrat chairmanships." A spokesperson for the state party, James Weselick, said the party was spending $15,000 to air the spot for 2 weeks initially. Phelan's office declined to comment on the ad, but by Friday, at least two of his allies in the House had fired back on Twitter. Representative Dustin Burroughs, Republican from Lubbock, tweeted a screenshot of a recent fundraising email from the Texas GOP and wrote, "Wow, Texas GOP's hypocrisy knows no boundaries. They are fundraising off the passage of the heartbeat and trigger bills to fund their attacks on the speaker who helped make them law." Burroughs was referring to the bills that the Phelan-led House passed during the 2021 session that allowed Texas to virtually outlaw abortion following the overturning of Roe v. Wade last year. Rinaldi spending more attacking a conservative Republican speaker than he did to help elect Republicans. Representative Charlie Guerin, Republican Fort Worth, added in his own tweet, Rinaldi disputes that the state party did little to help Republicans in the midterms. The ad represents an escalation in the push to end Democratic committee chairs, which has been building over the past 2 years. Phelan has defended the practice as a worthwhile tradition that sets the legislature apart from Congress and its regular dysfunction. While he has not released committee assignments for the current session yet, he has said he anticipates appointing generally the same proportion of Democrats to lead committees as last time. Supporters of ending Democratic committee chairs always faced long odds in finding enough support inside the House to change the rules, but they hoped to show their ranks had grown when the rules package came up for a vote last week. Instead, Phelan and his allies used points of order or procedural challenges to successfully prevent consideration of two amendments to restrict Democratic committee chairs. Banning Democratic committee chairs is one of the Texas GOP's 8 legislative priorities, and Rinaldi has been one of the most vocal advocates for it. The rules debate is over, but Rinaldi said in an interview that the state party wanted to take the extra month that we had before Phelan announces his committee chairs and encourage him to make the right decisions. Rinaldi responded to Guerin's criticism on Twitter, saying the money the state party spent on the ad pales in comparison to the millions we spent in support of Republicans this election cycle. The party has claimed it spent over $6 million in the November election, though critics have claimed much of that money funneled through the state party by national GOP groups and earmarked for certain efforts. Rinaldi said some of the money was indeed so-called pass-through money, but that the party made a very, very robust effort on its own, spending nearly $1 million in its November victory program to elect Republicans in the general election and over $1 million on an election integrity initiative. Guerin doesn't know what he's talking about, and it's complete deflection, Rinaldi said. Bankman-Fried assets of almost $700 million may be forfeited, by Ava Benny Morrison. Sam Bankman-Fried, co-founder of FTX cryptocurrency derivatives exchange, departs from court in New York, U.S., on Tuesday, January 3, 2023. Bankman-Fried pleaded not guilty to criminal charges Tuesday and is set to face a trial in October, a courtroom showdown likely to be one of the highest-profile white-collar fraud cases in recent years. In a court filing Friday, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, Damian Williams, outlined 10 counts with a mix of shares, cash, and cryptocurrency subject to forfeiture. The asset pool included about 55 million shares Bankman-Fried held in Robinhood Markets Incorporated. At Friday's closing price, those shares were valued at $526 million. The Department of Justice previously announced it had seized the shares, which were purchased with a $456 million loan from Alameda Research, FTX's sister trading house. The property subject to forfeiture also includes more than $20 million held in an account in the name of Emergent Fidelity Technologies, the holding company used to purchase the shares, more than $171 million in U.S. currency in accounts under the name FTX Digital Markets and assets and 3 Binance accounts. The accounts containing cash were seized by the government between January 4th and January 19th, according to the filing. Prosecutors use forfeiture orders as a way to claw back assets defendants obtained with ill-gotten gains. In Bernie Madoff's case, the judge ordered the late Ponzi schemer to forfeit more than $170 billion and his wife $80 million. Ross Ulbricht, the founder of the dark web bizarre Silk Road, was ordered to hand over about $28 million worth of Bitcoin as part of a 2014 forfeiture order. Bankman-Fried has pleaded not guilty to an 8-count indictment, including fraud and campaign finance law violations. He is accused of using FTX customer funds to prop up trading at Alameda, pay for personal expenses, and real estate. The 30-year-old is currently on bail after signing a $250 million package that effectively placed him under house arrest at his parents' home in California. FTX's new management, including restructuring expert John J. Ray III, have managed to track down billions of dollars of assets linked to the crypto empire as part of bankruptcy proceedings. Obituaries. Audrey Robinson. Audrey Winona Robinson, 92, of Kerrville, Texas, passed from this earth on January 16, 2023. Winona, as she was known to her friends, was born on September 9, 1930, to Homa C. Grant and Virginia Crawford Grant, outside Memphis, Texas. Winona is preceded in death by her parents, Homa and Virginia Grant of Pampa, sisters Virginia Clarice Grant, Jan Dollar, and Yvonne Heal. Also by husbands Otha Eugene Parker of Odessa, Ivy Farrell Robbie Robinson of Midland, and Lowell Box of Pampa, and nephew Jim Aaron Seeley of Pampa, Texas. She is survived by three children, daughters Gina Robinson Tier and Jana Robinson, and son Jay Robinson. She is also survived by two grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. A private burial will be held at Ellis Rest Haven Memorial Park Cemetery in Midland, Texas. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction and personal care of the professionals at Kerrville Funeral Home. Becca Standard. Becca Sue Bedingfield Standard spent her last days on earth surrounded by her family before peacefully walking into the arms of Jesus on Sunday, January 15, 2023. A celebration of life is scheduled for 11 a.m. Tuesday, January 24th, at Sunset Church of Christ in Carlsbad, New Mexico. Becca was born October 10, 1948, in Artesia, New Mexico, to J.E. Bedingfield and Beatrice Harlow Bedingfield. Becca was preceded in death by her parents, brother Wayne Bedingfield, and sister Lorene Lewis. Becca is survived by her husband of more than 57 years, Gary, brother John Bedingfield, and her three children, Jamie Standard, Sean Standard, and Christy Smith. Becca is also survived by seven grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. The family suggests, in lieu of flowers, consideration be given to making a donation in Becca's honor to Alzheimer's.org, Sunset Church of Christ Cradle Roll Children's Ministry, Hospice Care, or a nonprofit of choice. The Celebration of Life services will be available on the Sunset Church of Christ Carlsbad, New Mexico Facebook page for anyone who might not be able to attend in person. Eddie Merkitt. Eddie Joe Merkitt, age 66, passed away on January 15, 2023. The son of Kenneth and Joan Merkitt, Eddie was born March 6, 1956, in Lorain, Texas. Eddie is survived by his greatest blessings in his life, his son, Garrett Merkitt, his daughter, Amber K. Holt, their mother, Sherry Merkitt, his sister, Becky Piet, his brother, Adam Merkitt, and brother, Quentin Merkitt, in addition to numerous nieces and nephews. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. on January 28, 2023, in Lorain, Texas, at Lorain Cemetery for all family and friends. Arrangements are under the direction of Andrews Corgill Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to the Hillander School in honor of Eddie Merkitt. Robert Tyrone Kelly. Robert Tyrone Kelly, 80, of Bastrop, Texas, received his eternal wings on January 13, 2023, in Austin, Texas. Bob was born on July 15, 1942, in Austin, to Tyrone and Audrey Miller Kelly. Bob is survived by his wife Sally, his two children, Laura Kelly King, and David Kelly. He has two grandchildren and one great-grandchild and another great-grandchild on the way. He also leaves behind two brothers, John W. Kelly and Thomas E. Kelly. Bob was preceded in death by his parents. A memorial service will be held later. Eldon Reams. Eldon L. Reams, 93 of Midland, passed away January 20, 2023. The family will receive guests from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday, January 24, 2023, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held at 3 p.m. Wednesday, January 25, 2023, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com. Helen Joyce Kimbrell, 82 of Midland, passed away January 17, 2023. Memorial service will be held at 3 o'clock p.m. Saturday, January 28, 2023, at Christ Church Anglican. The family burial will be private. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.mpwelch.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.